I mentioned, I believe I did, that last Wednesday I wanted to pick up the rest of the story, or to go on from the place where I left off with the children of Israel coming out of Egypt and crossing the Red Sea, across the Red Sea at that time on almost said November again. You see, top of the bloopers, but Nisan 21, and Nisan 21 is the time when they came out. Now, I want to read an item here that was given me by, that was taken off of the internet, incidentally, and on the internet, and it's an interesting bit of information. Think about this. Now, the quartermaster general of the army was one that got involved with some of this, in case you wonder. But it says, Moses and the people of Israel were in the desert, but what was he going to do with them? They had to be fed, and feeding 3 to 3.5 million people, his figures, you see, I'm just reading it as is, would take a lot of food, according to some figures researched and released by a man who held the rank of general in the army and is a general quartermaster, so he knows what it takes to feed armies of food, armies food and supplies along the way. It is calculated that Moses would have to have had to come up with 1,500 tons of food every day just to keep these 3.5 million Israelites from starving to death. To feed them as you and I eat would take at least 4,000 tons of food every day. In order to haul that much food would require 2 freight trains, each of them a mile long, and at today's prices, the food bill for Moses' people would amount to something in the neighborhood of $6.5 million a day. And, of course, there were no freight trains, only a few camels and donkeys they managed to obtain here and there. And remember, they were out in the desert, the wilderness. They would have to have firewood to cook this food. This alone would take 4,000 tons of firewood and a few more freight trains, each of them a mile long, to haul this firewood each and every day. And just think, they were in the desert for 40 years. Speaking of the desert, the Israelites would need water, lots of water. And if they had only had enough water to drink and to wash a few dishes that they had, they didn't have a bunch of paper plates and plastics and all of that time, you know, here, it would take an estimated 11 million gallons of water every single day, and a freight train with tank cars 1,800 miles long just to bring it to them, the water. They did not have big lakes out there, and they only found a few small wells. How were they to get this much water? And another thing, they had to get across the Red Sea and to escape the Egyptians' army that purchased them. The Red Sea varies in width from about 250 miles in the south to 130 miles wide in the north, where it narrows. The average depth of the Red Sea is about 1,600 feet. From the relatively shallow depths of the Suez, the Gulf of Suez, to the maximum depth of 7,200 feet in the main basin. Now, if they were going to go through the Red Sea in a narrow path, double file, that double file would be 800 miles long, and it would take them 35 days and nights to cross. But they crossed the sea in one night. So that would mean, in order to do that, they would need to a break in the sea that was 3 miles wide, so they could walk 5,000 abreast. All these his figures, of course. Now, I'm just reading this as is. It says, still another problem was the sleeping arrangements. They needed some place to camp at night. There were no campsites out in the desert, and certainly nothing near the size that they would need. In order for the Israelites to put up their tents and campsites, it took a space two-thirds the state of Rhode Island, or a total of 750 square miles of campsite. A campsite 25 miles wide and 130 miles long. Talk about a logistical nightmare.
But do you think Moses figured this all these facts and statistics out before he left? He says, I doubt that he realized the enormity of this task, nor did he worry about it, his ability to pull this off. You see, Moses believed in God, and he believed God would provide a way to do all of this. God was able to supply all of these needs. So the next time you're faced with a task that seems impossible, and you see no way to get everything done that needs to be done, remember Moses. Remember that God, what God can do. If you truly trust in God, your problems will be taken care of by Him. If God could take care of Moses' situation, surely He can handle your current difficulty. Trust Him. I wanted to read that to you because it's a one man's version of it. I narrowed that down considerably when I talked about this, as you very well know. I narrowed it down to something like maybe 1.25 million people or something. But that still, even at that, with 5,000 abreast, you would still have a tremendous task of trying to fit that into a troop of people going through a 3 mile wide place. I happen to be an engineer myself, and so it was no problem for me to try to figure out how much that would be. You take that 3 miles and multiply it by 5,280, and you get the number of feet there. Divide that by 5,000, and you come up with something like 3.168 feet per person. How are they going to travel with all their herds and flocks and everything at 3.2 feet per person? That's ridiculous, really, to stop thinking about it. I think the passage was wider than that, and probably an estimate of 5,000 abreast might be something that would be sensible. I'll just say that, although there could have been considerably more than that, too, because of getting across the Red Sea in one night, and I talked about the fact that it was light for the Israelites in front and dark for the Egyptians that were stuck in the mud back there, or as I called it, and the Israelites went through on dry ground. That's not today. Today I want to pick it up from there. So I want to turn to Exodus, the 15th chapter, and start in verse 22. I would ask you right off the bat, have a marker. Mark the Numbers, the 33rd chapter, because we're going to bounce back and forth from Exodus to Numbers, back and forth today. It'd be nice if you just could mark the places so we could turn back and forth. Exodus 16 and verse 22. If I can find it here myself, maybe I can. Let's see. Did I say Exodus 16? I said Exodus 15, verse 22 is what I want. Can't even read my own notes here. I told you I was atop of the bloopers, so. Exodus 15, verse 22. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days into the wilderness and found no water. Well, if it was Nisan 21, when they went across the Red Sea, 3 days more would be Nisan 24, and since they crossed the Red Sea and were clear in the fourth day of the week, 4 and 3 is 7, the seventh day would be the Sabbath, and Nisan 24 was the Sabbath. Now, I think it's important that we catch that, because I'm going to show you the number of the Sabbaths where they stopped in, on their way, and I want to take you from there to Mount Sinai. Now, there are 7 weeks there, we know that, because there are 7 weeks between Passover and the Pentecost. So, let's see, where did I stop? Verse 22, didn't I? Now, when they, verse 23 says, when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. There must have been a lot of water there, though, because, you know, talking about the amount of water that we're dealing with, there had to be quite a substantial amount of water there. And for they were bitter. Therefore, the name was called Marah, or bitterness. That's what Marah means in the Hebrew. And the people complained against, not God, but they complained against Moses. Now, who was it that sent Moses? You see, their complaint, they might just as well say, well, they complained right away against God, and that's what Moses told them right here. They said, what shall we drink? So he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord allowed him to, showed him a tree, and when he cast it into the waters were made sweet. There must have been a substantial amount of water there that was made sweet so that they could drink. That was the very 3 days after they got out of the land of Egypt. Now, I said we need to be aware that we have to go to Numbers 33. The reason I say that, because Numbers 33, if you turn there, it says in verse 1, these are the journeys of the children of Israel who went out into out of the land of Egypt by their armies under the hand of Moses and Aaron. Now, Moses wrote down the starting points of their journeys at the command of the Eternal. So God told him to be sure to keep a logging of all of these things, their starting points, where they marched from. And these are the journeys according to their starting points. Now, I'm not going to read verses 3 down to 7 because that deals with going to the Red Sea and crossing, but the points there we've already covered last Wednesday. But I want to drop down to verse 8 here. It says, they departed before Hahiroth, and passed through the midst of the sea into the wilderness, and went 3 days' journey to the wilderness of Etham, and camped at Marah. Now, we just read that over in Exodus 15 and verse. I said we'd bounce back and forth, so I hope you can turn your pages back and forth to that place, because I want to drop to verse 27 now in Exodus 15. Exodus 15 and verse 27. Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees, so they camped there by the water. Now, they found 12 wells of water. They must have been pretty substantial wells, too, to supply that huge amount of water that was necessary to feed that many, even just 1 million people, just kind of see if your mind can sort of encompass the amount of water that was necessary there. Now, I don't think the land was all polluted like we have it today. You couldn't do this and have a pond out here put in because of all of the stinking chemicals that are put in to kill you. But, you know, when I was a boy out in the field back in the 20s, or in the very early 30s is when this actually was. I was on a tractor one day, and I was out in the field, and I was so thirsty that I could hardly stand it. And I just got off the tractor and went down to the creek that was there, a nice little stream flowing, and I just laid down on my belly and drank water right out of the creek. Didn't worry a bit about that then. I wouldn't do that today. Kill you. It really would. I mean, it's serious. I'm serious about that. You can't do that today. I did that. Never worried a bit about it. And so, if they had places where they had pools of water, they didn't have to worry about that water being contaminated like we had today. I only mention that because of the literal logistics of this whole thing. You can realize what a problem it had to have been for all of them. Now, verse 27 says they came to Elim. Let's go back to Numbers 33 and verse 10. I believe is what I want. Yes, verse 10. They moved from Elim and camped by the Red Sea. I don't want to get ahead of the story here, but you see if we flash back and forth to Exodus 16 now, and verse 1, the very next verse, says, they journeyed from Elim, and all of the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai. Whoa, up. We got a little spill here. We got quite a little bit of in between all of this. And if we didn't have numbers to tell us where the stops were, we'd miss a big part of the story here as far as this story is concerned. I said Numbers 33 and verse 10, they moved from Elim and camped at what? Oh, not the wilderness of Sin, but they camped at the Red Sea. And they moved from the Red Sea and camped in the wilderness of Sin. Now, I mention that because we mentioned that they came to Marah on the 24th day of Nisan. Now, if they went and they stopped and camped at the Red Sea, what would that be? Probably the very next Sabbath, wouldn't it? The next Sabbath after Nisan 24 would be Iyar 1, first day of the second month on God's calendar. I didn't bring my Hebrew calendar up here. I could bring it up and show you how that would fall, even as it would this year, as far as that goes, the days being the same as far as the weeks are concerned. But it would be ER1 if they camped at the Red Sea at that time. Now some of this begins to make a little bit more sense. Because if we flash back over to Exodus 16 and verse 1, they journeyed from Elim, and the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the month, second month. What happened to the first Sabbath there, the other Sabbath in there? See, we said that we have to account for all of those Sabbaths. ER1 was the Sabbath after Nisan 24. Then ER8 had to be in there also. So we have Elim, where there was probably ER1. Then if they went to, they moved from Elon to the Red Sea, that almost surely would have to be the eighth day of ER on God's calendar. Now, I think that makes sense. It certainly does to me without any point. And then they moved from the Red Sea and camped at the wilderness of Sin. What's the next Sabbath after ER 8? ER 15, 1 month exactly after they came out of Egypt. So it mentions here in Exodus 16 in verse 1, it was the 15th day of the second month. We have that as a benchmark now. We know that's right because God says so. After the departing from the land of Egypt. So this is a one full 30-day month now that they've been out. Now, I wanted to point that out simply because they had problems along the way. You know, they had all kinds of problems at Marah. I brought Josephus' book again today, and this time I want to read from book 3, just one little paragraph here, if I can find it here. Book 3 and the first paragraph. First chapter, I'll get it after a while. Another blooper. First chapter and paragraph 3 of Josephus' Book of the Antiquities here. And I want to read just this one portion of that. So they laid the blame on their conductor, of Moses, of course. And they made heavy complaints against him and said that this their miserable state and the experience that they had of adversity were owing to him. You know, Moses, it's all your fault. For that they had then journeyed an entire 30 days. Just like I said, 15th day of ER of the second month, 30 days, their entire 30 days. Now, I read to you last Wednesday, where they carried a supply that was to last them. If they rationed it out carefully, it would last them 30 days. Now the 30 days is up. Now they ate very sparingly in order to have enough food to last them that long. And they had been used to eating well because the Egyptians at least fed their slaves so that they could work. And they hadn't been eating very well. Now, do you think that affected their mind and attitude after about 30 days of eating very, very sparingly when they'd been used to being fed full? I don't question that at all. See, the entire 30 days, and had spent all of the provisions that they brought with them, and meeting with no relief, they were in a very desponding condition. And by fixing their attention upon nothing but their present misfortunes, they were hindered from remembering what deliverances they had received from God and those of the virtue and by the virtue of whom they received all of them. So they were very angry at their conductor and were zealous in their attempt to stone him as the direct occasion of their present miseries. I just wanted to read that one paragraph out of here to show you that that was their circumstance when they got out. Now, the rank and file of the Israelites, let's face it, in the main, they were slaves. Anytime you have a large city of people, a million people, something of that nature, obviously you have various categories on both ends of the scale. We all know that. That's the way it always is. You can't help that. You have some that were quite prominent people, like the children of Israel, leaders of, among them. And I think I read to you before where even some of the Israelites themselves were forced by the Egyptians to become leaders over the slaves themselves. And so that there were leading people among the Israelites also. And so, but I'm talking about the whole rank and file of the majority of all of the people were slaves. The men were slaves, at least. And I don't know what they did as far as the women were concerned, because they probably made them slaves too, knowing the Egyptians at that time. But that's neither here nor there. I'm talking about just the condition of the rank and file of the people. I think it'd be good for us to remember some of that as we read these things. Now, we get into a little more here when we find out in Exodus 16. That's why I wanted to read that part. They got there on the 15th day of the second month, and they were out of food. Verse 4, Exodus 16 and verse 4. Then the Eternal said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota each day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not." Did they? We know the story after the facts. And they complained against Moses, which was really complaining right against God all the way along the path here. And they weren't keeping God's law according to all of this. Now, it gets a little deeper as we go on. I hope we can see the story. I know we can't describe the situation that they were in, and to actually get among them to see what was going on, I can't do that at all. We can only surmise what had to happen here with some of this. But God said he was going to rain bread down from heaven. "I'll test them," he says. And verse 5 says, "It shall be on the sixth day," obviously the sixth day of the week, which would be what we would call Friday or the preparation day for the Sabbath, "that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. Moses and Aaron said to all of the children of Israel, 'At evening you shall know that the Eternal has brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, for you will hear, for he hears your complaints against the Eternal.'" Not simply against Moses, but when they were complaining against Moses, they were complaining against the one that sent Moses there in the first place. So they were complaining right against God. "But what are we that you complain against us?" Moses says. Well, and Moses said, verse 8, "This shall be seen when the Eternal gives you meat to eat in the evening, and in the morning, bread to the full. For the Eternal hears your complaints, which you make against him." They were complaining against God. "And what are we that you complain not against us, but against the Eternal?" Verse 9. "Then Moses spoke to Aaron, and say to the congregation of the children of Israel, 'Come near before the Lord.'" Now, again, that's a thought that I have, and I said, how do you talk to a million people all in one? Obviously, they had to have communication means somehow. I don't know what was there, but he told them to speak to the whole congregation. And "for he has heard your complaints," verse 10, "and it came to pass as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the children of Israel, that they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Eternal," verse 11 says, "spoke to Moses, saying, 'I have heard the complaints of the children of Israel. Speak to them, saying, at twilight," or at Peneha, I can't even say that, Abrazim, or however that expression is done. That expression appears 11 times in the Old Testament, incidentally. And 4 of those times are in the morning and evening sacrifice. But it says, "At twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am the Eternal." "Now so it was that quails came up at the evening and covered the camp. And in the morning the dew lay all around the camp." How many of you have ever had to farm and have chickens or anything like that? I hope some of you know what it's like to have poultry. When do they go to bed? When the sun goes down, they're in bed normally. You see, that's just the way it is. I got a kick out of going down here to the store here a couple of weeks ago, and the lady told about that fact that her dad had chickens out on the farm, and they went on vacation one time, and they had a friend in the city that never knew the first thing about a chicken. And they asked him if he would go shut up the henhouse, you know, and when the chickens come in at night, and they said they had no idea that he wouldn't know how the chickens went to roost. And he said they come back off their vacation, and they found that this guy shut up the chicken house, and he tried to catch those chickens one at a time and bring them in and put them in. Said they had feathers all over that farm. I laughed about that because that's the way city people are. They don't know when the chickens go to bed or when birds even go to bed, most of them. Not all of them, incidentally, but a lot, most of them. And so it's generally they're in bed by sundown, let's face it. That's just the way it is. So when it came to twilight, the quails were down. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Now, verse 14 says, when the layer of dew lifted, there on the surface of the wilderness was a small, round substance as fine as frost on the ground. And when the children of Israel saw it, they said to one another, manna! That's the Hebrew word for what is this? What is this? Manna. For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, this is the bread which the Eternal has given you to eat. This is the thing which the Eternal has commanded. Let every man gather in according to each one's needs. One omer. For each person. Now, there were more persons in some families than there were in other families, obviously. So when they gathered enough for each person in the family, why, they had so many omers. An omer, incidentally, is approximately 2 quarts, just so you have some kind of a sense of measure of this. I didn't say exactly, but something of that order. And for each person, according to the number of persons, some families had more than others. And let every man take for those who are in his tent. Verse 17, then the children of Israel did so, and gathered some more and some less. And when they measured it by omers, he who gathered much had nothing left over, and he who had gathered little had no lack. What did that take? With all of those variations of people and all of the differences that they would have in gathering all of this, God divided out so there was just enough for an omer for each person, whether they picked up a bunch or not, whatever they did. Incredible miracle, if you stop to think of it. To me, sort of comparable to Jesus taking the 5 loaves and 2 fishes and feeding 5,000. God is able to do that without any question of a doubt. Every man had gathered according to each one's needs. And verse 19, Moses said, let no one leave any of it till morning. Notwithstanding, they did not heed Moses. They wouldn't listen. You might as well say, well, they didn't believe God. But some of them left part of it till the morning, and it bred worms and stank. And Moses was angry with them. So they gathered it every morning, and every man according to his need, and when the sun became hot, it melted. And verse 22, so it was, on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, 2 omers for every one. For all of the, and all of the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. Then he said to them, well, this is what the Eternal has said. Tomorrow is a Sabbath rest. God had to teach them the seventh day Sabbath forcibly. Can I put it that way? Forcibly, by their food. And he did. A holy Sabbath to the Eternal. Bake what you bake today and boil what you boil. and lay up for yourselves all that remains to keep until the morning for the Sabbath. Prepare it on the Friday, the preparation day. Bake it and boil it. I mean, what did they have here? I don't know, but this was some tremendous substance. They could undoubtedly know how to spice their food in those days just the same as you ladies do. I find some very fine cooks in the Church of God that know how to season food, and I think they did that too. They had seasonings in those days without any question of a doubt in my mind, and they could prepare this into, well, good substantial meals. Now, well, verse 24, so they held it until morning, and Moses commanded, and it did not stink, nor was there any worms in it. Then Moses said, eat that today, for tomorrow is the Sabbath to the Eternal. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, and on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there shall be none. In a way, wouldn't it be marvelous if God kind of did that with us today? Oh, I shouldn't have said that. It'd be a horrible mix-up in this society, wouldn't it? Nobody knows the Sabbath anymore. But verse 27. Now it happened that some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather, and they found none. Wouldn't you know? Sure enough, they hadn't got it yet. And the Eternal said to Moses, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See, they haven't had the Ten Commandments given to them yet for another, what, several weeks until the into the third till the third month, but when God spoke to them at Mount Sinai. But how long will you not obey me? See, verse 29, the Lord has given you the Sabbath, therefore he gives you on the sixth day bread for 2 days. Let each man remain in his place, and let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. They had to be forced to do it, as you see, because some of them went out to gather, and sure enough, it wasn't there. But then they decided that, well, we better not just starve. We'll go ahead and obey. Forcibly, they had to obey. You know, I think about that, and I think of the Church of God. We, in a sense of the word, forcibly obeyed Mr. Armstrong. Now, I say that lovingly, because no man on earth ever taught me the things Mr. Armstrong did. But he was a very, very forceful leader. And he was so forceful that people were, they were actually, the term I'm trying to think of, can't even think, I should have written it down in my notes and didn't. They were unified, that's the term I'm trying to say. They were unified, but they weren't in unity. They were unified, shall I say, by force. Now, the Israelites sort of did this too. They were unified by force. Think of it. And as soon as that force would relax, well, they'd just go off and do their thing. And now we've seen that happen to some people in the Church of God. That just suddenly, when Mr. Armstrong was gone, they went out to do their own thing. Whatever that might be. I'm not going to complain about that one way or the other. That's not the point. But real unity, we're getting it here, brethren. More real unity. And unity doesn't mean uniformity. There's a difference between the two, if you see the difference. Unity means that we've got to willingly obey. The children of Israel obeyed because God didn't feed them if they didn't. Excuse me, but I'll say it like it is. But he did feed them for 40 long years. Absolutely incredible. 40 long years. During those 40 years, Did they ever have any incidents where they shouldn't be reminded that God was doing that for them day in and day out all the time? Why, they time and time again they complained against God. You know, it's really incredible when you think about that. I have pondered that all kinds of ways myself, and I know I can't come up with the answers, but it just seems to me incredible. So the people rested the seventh day, it says in verse 30. I wanted to get that. Now, that's not the end of Exodus 16 quite, because I want one more little thing out of it here. Drop down to verse 32. It says, Moses said, this is the thing that the Eternal has commanded. Fill an omer with it to be kept for your generations, that they may see the bread which I fed you in the wilderness, that I brought out of the land of Egypt. Now, that bread didn't stink or breed worms and all of that stuff. God had them set that apart. And they carried that in the Ark of the Covenant. And I don't know how long that went, but as long as there was, I guess. Anyway, that's beside the point. I don't know all of the answers to those things, but they had that for posterity. Verse 34, and the Eternal commanded Moses, and so Aaron laid it up before the testimony to be kept, and the children of Israel ate manna 40 years until they came to an inhabited land, and they ate until they came to the border of the land of Canaan. Now an omer is one-tenth of an ephah. So they had 40 years that they had that manna come down day in and day out. And you know what? Their clothes didn't even wear out during that period of time. I want to turn to 29th chapter. Boy, I've got that trained, I guess. And I believe it's verse 5. 29th chapter and verse 5. We'll come back to this story here. So 29th chapter of Deuteronomy and verse 5. Where it's, I'm quoting now what Moses had told the children of Israel. It says, I have led you 40 years in the wilderness. Your clothes have not worn out on you, and your sandals have not worn out on your feet. You have not eaten bread, nor have you drunk wine or similar drink, that you may know that I am the Eternal, your God. Now, they went 40 years, and their clothes didn't even wear out. Doesn't it seem like they would begin to get the point somewhere along the way? But unfortunately, they didn't have God's Holy Spirit. They had it with them, but by no means in them. I say by no means. I don't mean that Moses didn't. I'm not going to judge anybody. But in the general, I'm talking about the ones that rebelled didn't have God's Holy Spirit. I mention this because I want to go on with the story here, if I have time to do it. Can't be 4 o'clock already, is it? What have I done? Talk too long, that's what I did. I want to go to chapter 17, and there's a lot more to the story here before we get to Mount Sinai. Chapter 17. Then all the congregation of the children of Israel set out on their journey from the wilderness of Sin, according to the commandment of the Lord, and camped in Rephidim. Now, if they camped in Rephidim, would that be the next Sabbath? Well, if we didn't have Numbers 33, we might assume that. Let's go to Numbers 33 again. See, it says in verse 12, they journeyed from the wilderness of Sin and camped at Dophka. Oh, well, that helps us find another camp on the Sabbath then, probably. Didn't even mentioned over here in Exodus 17. And they moved from Dophka and camped at Alush, verse 13, Numbers 33. Then verse 14 of Numbers 33 says, they moved from Alush and camped at Rephidim. Oh, now we finally got to Rephidim. So, We found those missing 2 weeks. They got the Rephidim. We wouldn't know what Sabbath that would be unless we had some other waymarks along the way. We found ER 15 was the 15th day of the second month. Then 15-7 is 22. ER 22 would be the next Sabbath that was in here, probably at Dafka. I say probably because it doesn't say that clearly. But then they came to Rephidim. Now, there was another stop along the way, but what was the problems here? Well, first off, they didn't have any water. And they complained to Moses again about that. I haven't got time to read all of this anymore now, but you can read it in the in chapter 17. And Moses was told to strike the rock, and water came out. Now, it had to be a fantastic amount of water that came forth. But I'm going to drop down to verse 8 of chapter 17. Exodus 17 and verse 8. Now Amalek came and fought with Israel where? In Rephidim. No wonder it mentions Rephidim over in Exodus 17 in verse 1. You see, they fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, choose out men and go out to fight with Amalek. And tomorrow I'll stand on the top of the hill, and if I hold my hands up, they'll win. And if my hands fall down, well, Amalek will win. Now, I was going to tell you about an incident I had with a man, and I can't take time to do all of that anymore. But you see, who won the battle? Obviously, God gave them no victory. As long as they could prop Moses' hands up, they could win. And they finally did. They won the battle. But all of this at Rephidim, that's the reason I wanted to mention this here and mention this spot, because we've still got more to the story if we carry on. Chapter 17, let's see. We got another little hitch that comes along in the way. Chapter 18. Well, let me read the last verse of... No, that isn't what I want, is it? No, I don't want that. That's chapter 18 of Exodus. And Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard of all that God had done to Moses for Israel and his people and what the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. Then Moses' father-in-law took Zipporah, Moses' wife, and his sons, and brought him out there. Moses had sent them back, and they came to him when? Verse 5. And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife to the wilderness where he was encamped, not in Rephidim, but at the mountain of God. Now, I said we accounted for the possibility of ER 22 and then ER 29 was the next Sabbath. But by now, you see, they came, they camped at Rephidim, and after all of this war and all of this fighting or all of this complaining about not having water, this ER 29 must have been about that place. Then they moved, you see, for Numbers 33, verse 15 says, they departed from Rephidim and came where? Numbers 33 and verse 15. They departed from Rephidim and camped in the wilderness of Sinai. Is that where the mountain of God was? That's where Jethro came. Exodus 18 and verse 5, they camped at the mountain of God. Now, I don't know exactly all of the details of this. I can't. But it seems here clear enough to me that by now they had reached Mount Sinai area. And when did they reach that area? No, we go back to Exodus, the last verse of Exodus 18. So Moses, let's see. Then Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went back to his own land. Then the very next verse, right after that, says, in the third month, that's the month of Sivan, after the children of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, on the same day, that little passage has caused controversy for a long time. What same day of what? And the best that we've ever been able to come up with, and I think they're right, whether I'm right or wrong, it makes no difference as far as that's concerned. God's right, always. And if I'm right, then the same day meant the same day that they started out of Egypt. 15th day of Nisan, this would be the, not the 15th day of, but the same day was the day, what day did they come out? On the fifth day of the week. Thursday, if you please, we would call it. Then Thursday, 2 days they went from Ramses to Succoth and stopped and camped. And if this is the same day, then they would come here on a Thursday because of the events that are described here about washing their clothes and being cleaned up. You can read the rest. I can't take time to read all of this in Exodus 19, but you see, if we read verse 2 of Exodus 19, it says, for they had departed from Rephidim and came to the wilderness of Sinai and camped in the wilderness. So Israel camped there before the mountain. Now that was the mountain of God, if we realize that they fought with Amalek at Rephidim. And then Jethro came. As they were camped at the mountain of God, they had to have been there for that period of time because it was the next Sabbath that comes after ER 29 would be Sivan 7. That is the seventh Sabbath after the days of unleavened bread, and we always count it as Passover. We count them off. And then the next day after the 49th day is the Passover, Pentecost! I know what it is. I just can't. 50th day. The 50th day. Then would have been Pentecost. Now they called it the Feast of Weeks. 7 weeks. 7 weeks. Then it would be Sivan 7 would be the Sabbath of the seventh Sabbath in that group. And Sivan 8 then would have been the day that God gave the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai, which we call Pentecost today. And we commonly say that that was always the case, that the law was given at that time, that we commemorate Pentecost. And I just thought I would take you through that to bring you up to how the children of Israel actually made that that trip to get to Mount Sinai in those 7 weeks.